Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy, and I'm joined by Matt Two Rumpets. Good evening, Matt. How are you?
And good afternoon to you. I am doing quite well because there is so much to talk about. Despite the fact there was no race.
There's loads of news that's come out. It's almost as if people's livelihoods depend on generating news in between races, which is very handy for us.
It does help a lot when it comes to the show planning and research, I have to admit.
So I had grand plans for this Sunday, because normally, at the moment, I've got my morning routine of a morning radio show on a Sunday. Then we watch a race that I can't remember the before time where there were no races. And then we have to do all our prep, get ready, do Missed Apex Podcast, finish at 11. So because there was no race today, I thought I had 6 hours free. No, 7 hours from coming home and then getting onto Missed Apex stuff. I had such grand plans for it. Guess what I did?
If you're anything like me, you probably took a nap.
I took two naps. I came home, had some food, had a nap, did an iRacing racy car race, went straight back to the sofa and had another nap. So, okay, I was a bit scared of what we'd do without a race on a Sunday, and I've figured it out. We will have a nap. So that's the new plan. If there's no F1 race, we nap. But we are also an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed. With the kind permission of our better halves, we aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We're not just going to waffle on, just me and Matt. Oh no, we have the cream of motorsport PR, Chris Stevens. How's it going, Chris?
Hey, Spanners. I feel like it's been so long since I've been on the show. I mean, like pre the season starting.
I haven't missed you at all.
Really? I mean, I could have sworn that the messages you sent me crying, begging me to get me back on the show. It's so much better with you on it, they said.
No, I have Kyle and Alex now. I barely need you at all. But on a serious note, you're quite busy during race weekends, especially with Formula E and Formula 2, Formula 3. So we might have to make do with just in-betweeny races for you.
Yeah, it might have to be. I mean, I didn't do a lot of race reviews last year, but hopefully like towards the end of the season, maybe I can get on a few more of them.
Yeah, be great to have you. And someone who does a lot of work behind the scenes is Uncle Steve. Steve Amy, our upside down video guy.
Hi, Spanners. How are you going? It's really good here. I'm feeling a bit strange, to tell you the truth, because after 6 months of sitting around doing nothing, well, not doing nothing, but no work, I'm suddenly back and busy working again. It feels very weird.
I know. I was used to having you at our beck and call at lockdown. Hey, Steve, can you produce funky new graphics for our iRacing season? Steve, can we have a new bumper? But now you've got to, like, earn money to eat food.
Well, yes, do a bit of that. But... I mean, I'm still keeping busy with getting the iRacing stuff together. I've got a new set of graphics for the next iRacing season when it comes along. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, the Missed Apex iRacing season. If you want to get involved in that, I think we're going to start in around, you know, around mid-August. Email me spannersready@gmail.com if you're an iRacer and you want to join our league. Also, though, we've been swarming the official series as well. So me and Matt and Brad, Jeansy, Kyle have all been kind of getting onto the official iRacing Formula 2 races. And we've had a kit that has been beautifully designed by Sean Bull. Yes, that Sean Bull. And we're out there decked, Matt. And it's quite a view, isn't it, when we've swarmed the official races with our black and red Mist Apex tribe.
Yeah, and somehow we've managed to not get hammered for being total unpleasant people during the races, which I think is the most amazing thing.
Because when we do the Mist Apex series, we really encourage clean racing, good racing. I think it's a fun place to do your sim racing. So if you want to get involved with that, spannersready@gmail.com. Now, I have been furiously stalling where I, you know, trying to get the big dirty news bumper up. And I can't find it. So I'm going to try and improvise something. Let's see if this works. Here we go. Big dirty news. Pretty sure I got away with that. I don't think anyone noticed a difference. I think that's exactly the same. So, Matt, continue as if nothing was wrong with the big dirty news. Let's start with Ferrari. Not a good start to the season for Ferrari. Certainly not where they want to be. So they've made massive structural changes of one new job, as far as I can tell.
Well, I think it's a bit more than that. Although, as far as the news bumper goes, like, I don't even remember what that sounds like. So as far as I'm concerned, that was a correct one.
It was. Nice.
No, what has happened is Binotto has realized that things are terrible and that the structure of the firm, as it is not working.
Yeah.
So he's made a big announcement. They're bringing Rory Byrne back into a much more active capacity. He's been a consultant. He was the one responsible for the Schumacher cars and for most of their championship winning designs in the recent past, recent-ish past, I guess, at this point. But when you're my age, everything is recent. So, you know.
That's true.
And so what they said specifically is they're instituting a chain of command that is more focused and simplified and provides the heads of each department the necessary powers to achieve their objectives. They've been operating under a flatter management structure, which to me sounded a lot like the previous McLaren amorphous glob of ideas floating around in a maze and never getting acted on. So it seems like they're trying to clean things up and simplify them. They're kind of copying McLaren, in my estimation. But the big deal really is Rory Byrne, because people in the know oftentimes put him in the same league as people like Adrian Newey and those sorts of designers.
Rory Byrne, of course, who also helped dig Ferrari out of their 2012 hole. If you remember the absolute dog of a car that was at the beginning of the season. Although Fernando Alonso did manage to take it to within 3 points of a driver's championship. But of course, it's not just about one person. It's about the whole structure in general, which has had a bit of an upheaval. And it's what Ferrari needs. I mean, you look back, they haven't won the driver's title since 2007, 13 years ago. They've won the constructors since then. But if you look at who they've had with the team, the drivers, Raikkonen, Alonso, Vettel, they've gone through 14 principals in that amount of time as well. It's very clear there is a fundamental issue with the F1 team.
Perhaps. And Gonzo George in the live chat. Hello, live chat room. They're watching us live. Well, you can watch us record this live by going to YouTube and searching for Mist Apex Podcast. Says it's been forever since he's actually designed a car. Now, if I'm going to be cynical, Chris, this sounds to me a lot like three terrible results with little hope going forward. If I was a cynic, I would look at Binotto and say, look at him shaking up things below him. He's installed someone in a kind of director of football role directly underneath him. I think that the job title is performance. You know, it's the performance department. In fact, Matt, is that correct? So Enrico Cardiel is heading up this new performance department. So Binotto's going, oh, see, it wasn't me. It's the performance that's lacking. I've installed a new person and he will command a department head's wage as well. And that will fix everything. He's effectively bought himself another 6 months.
Yeah, well, again, much like McLaren, he's taken a look at it and said that part of our problem is that the way this is organized, we're not really getting the best out of the resources that we have. And we're also going to bring back someone who is potentially still a world-class designer to help out with this transition and to take a look at the big picture, because he's been in the sport long enough to know which file drawers to go rifling in to find the things that are actually going to work.
Yeah, he may well be in his 70s, but he sure still knows how to make a good race car. And even though he was supposed to retire at the end of 2006, that never happened. And he was always sort of retained in a sort of consultancy role. And maybe they just want to bring him on a from a consultancy to a semi-permanent basis, I guess you would call it. But at least Binotto is acknowledging the problem, which previous team principals have just denied.
What's the problem?
Well, there you go. Well, it has to be something fundamental, and maybe they're the ones finding it out now. You know, we don't know what it is yet, but hopefully they'll find out with this new structure.
Steve?
Hasn't there been something fundamentally wrong with Ferrari's, you know, internal structure and political system for about the last 30 years?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to go back and find a time where there hasn't been some kind of issue with them in one way or another. And it just fundamentally, the car has problems. The rules are causing them problems because of the new token rules about upgrading your car has put them in a real bind. As I've discovered, that one of the major sticking points when they talk about all the drag on the car is the side pods, because Ferrari has stacked their radiators in the side pods in a way that they thought would be advantageous, but has proved not to be. In order to change that, they have to burn one of the only two tokens they have for changes between now and the end of next year. So if they're wrong about it and they implement the design, they've only got one token left to solve it. This is probably why you're seeing them wanting people like Rory Byrne back in action as they try to solve this problem.
Okay, so Matt, I know you and I have been kind of flip-flopping between, you know, me saying it's all pretty much down to a lack of engine performance, and you're saying there's a lot wrong with the car as well. I can't help but feel that they're in a similar position to Red Bull when they were underpowered with the Honda, and they couldn't use the biggest tool in their arsenal, which was Adrian Newey being really good at putting downforce on stuff. It's hard for me to get my head around anything other than Ferrari are massively down on power, so they can't do the things they want to do aerodynamically. And I, from my point of view, I think Binotto has allowed the team to get to this point. So he, if you want to go on the most severe side of things, Matt, he has overseen an era where Ferrari have been somehow getting, let's use the legalese carefully, somehow managing to increase their fuel flow rate in a way that the technical directives will definitely now not let them do after clarification with the FIA. Binotto has allowed the team to get to that situation. So they've done all their development based on their engine and the trickery and whatever they were able to do that they now can't do. So Binotto's allowed that to happen. He's the guy who is responsible for the state of 2020 and 2021. And now he's just scrambling around looking for other reasons when really that's the huge one. That's it. Take that problem away. Ferrari are further up the grid.
Yeah. The problem I have with that is that they are two diverse strands of problems here. As they got into the season with the engine that was still powerful, they realized that their aerodynamic concept lacked downforce, and that they were trapped in adding more downforce on. The downforce they could add wound up being much more draggy. And as I'm understanding it now, mostly from reading Summer's articles, if I'm being honest, the problem is the way they've configured the radiators and the side pods is contributing to a lack of flow down the car. It's creating a huge amount of drag. If they can get rid of that drag, then the engine power they have will be more effective. So it's a both things. It's not a one leading to the other. It's two separate problems that have now combined into one, if you know what I mean. So it's a bit of a semantic argument from my point of view, but the end result is, yeah, right now they're underpowered on the engine department and they're dragging the aero, and that's never a good thing.
Uncle Steve.
Can I suggest that there is actually one easy way for Ferrari to fix all these problems? Hire a couple of photographers and send them out to photograph the Mercedes car and just copy that, as has been done.
Do you know there's going to be a whole like wave of this now because they've opened up the floodgates. They're like, well, why don't you all just do this then?
Okay, interesting one. And since Steve has set us down that path, we are expecting some kind of decision on the Renault protest before Silverstone. So knowing our luck, it's going to come out, you know, an hour or two after the podcast is released, and we're going to know whether the brake duct is deemed to be a copy of the 2019 Mercedes, or whether they have enough, you know, IP that they bought the IP previously, based all their designs off of it. So, you know, have they designed it themselves enough since obtaining it under the old regulations? So someone's going to clarify that for us very quickly this week. But could Ferrari go and do it? And I heard we've been debating this a lot in our Patreon Slack group. Somebody said, well, if Racing Point do that, why don't Williams just do it? And I think there has been an underestimation of how hard it is to do that. So let's take Racing Point as not liars for a second, because they have said, we took photographs of the car and we made the best possible copy we could. And then we've also, you know, based our designs and our own philosophy around that, based on a concept, but our design. If we take them for their word that they did that, that's amazing. That's an incredible achievement. It's based on the back of skillful engineers who are used to punching above their weight and making the most of their resources. Force India commonly accepted to be the best pound-for-pound team in F1 during their time there. So they've done something incredible, if we take it as true. So do Williams have the ability to do that, Chris? Do Ferrari have the ability to go and photograph a Mercedes and copy it? Maybe it's something that is so difficult that Racing Point have just pulled off a genius masterstroke.
So it is really difficult to do because angles and photography, they can make a really big difference. And when we're talking about aerodynamic pieces where 1 degree of difference is going to be tenths in lap time, potentially. And, you know, you'll see the Racing Point, as much as we call it the 2019 Mercedes, it's not doing the same lap times as the 2019 Mercedes for a multitude of reasons. And of course, the other issue as well is all the internals as well. So the brake duct's a prime example. What's going on inside that brake duct? They don't have any photos of that. They have to do that part themselves.
Matt, just before you come in, just want to answer the Jotma in the chat room who says, it's simply not true. You don't have to be brilliant to come up with this idea. No. You don't have to be brilliant to come up with the idea.
Shameless.
You have to be shameless.
Shameless.
But you have to be brilliant to do it and to implement it. And I don't think it is shameless. When Braun turned up with a double diffuser in 2009, the rest of the teams didn't go, fair play, we'll just sit here without a double diffuser. They took that concept and then ran with it and made their own version. So if you look at the concept that Racing Point have copied, Matt, isn't it essentially that they've copied the front wing, the nose, and the aero concept and the low rake philosophy, and then worked from there?
Their last development was a copy of what Mercedes had on their car in Japan last year. So no, they've pretty much copied the whole thing, kit and caboodle. And to answer Chris, for the outside of the car, I believe the tools exist to do a pretty exact copy. But as you point out, it's the inside and the underneath and the bits that you don't always get the good pictures of that are going to be the real sticking points when you try to put the whole package together. Racing Point did have the advantage last year in that a lot of the things that would be problematic were available to them because they were not listed parts. And this gets to, I think, the fundamental. You remember how everybody got angry at Haas?
Yeah.
For the way they came into the sport. They said, hey, wait a minute. These rules don't apply to us until we put a car on the grid. So we're going to do whatever we want. And it was caused them a great deal of approbation in the paddock. But it was a brilliant idea because they did really well with it.
Yeah.
So this is a similar thing, except for in this instance, the listed parts are the ones you're really meant to either own or design entirely on your own and not so much entirely copy. And I think that for people who follow this sport a long time, that's like, it's not illegal, but it's sort of is the kind of thing where I'm trying to think, there was a great hockey example that just went right out of my head where someone just basically skated up to the goaltender and just like sat there right in front of his face. It wasn't illegal until the next game when the league decided to outlaw it. But no one had ever done it because it just sort of went against basically the way the game is normally played.
Okay, so 2 points on that. Firstly, I remember when Haas came in and made that decision to not race that year, we were all like, huh? You're kind of ready to go. But it was smart in the end because they had access to the Ferrari facilities, wind tunnels, and some people were implying facilities to the staff as well. Now, I don't think there's anything amoral about trying your best to copy a car. And just to clarify the point you've made with the listed parts, Matt, the understanding certainly coming out of Racing Point is they bought that brake, or in fact, they're saying they came up with it themselves based on the external photos. So we're yet to see if the internals are a massive copy. But had you bought the non-listed part in 2019 and then gone, this is ours now, we know how it works because we've bought the design. Now, how can we make that integrate with our car? Well, let's make that flap bigger. Okay, let's make that inlet slightly wider. Brilliant. That actually works with our design now. Now that's kind of your brake drum. So that to me would be the differentiating point. You get to 2020 and you go, yeah, this is the brake drum based off the non-listed part we bought in 2019. Sorry, Steve, you've been waiting a while. Steve.
Oh, I was just going to make a point. Chris, you said earlier that despite the fact that the pink Mercedes is a dead copy, that they're not doing Mercedes times. I would just like to point out that after three races, yeah, they're not maybe doing Mercedes times yet, but they seem to be doing far better times than they were doing last year before they had copied the design. So something is working, and they've only had three races. Give those guys another three races to fine tune it, and they're going to have that car working pretty damn well. I was really surprised at how fast off the mark they were, particularly in Hungary.
Yeah, so my point was that you can't say it's exactly the same as the Mercedes because it's not doing what Mercedes did last year. It's certainly a step up from where Racing Point were the previous year. There's a question in the chat room as well, asking like why Ferrari in particular can't use their year-old engines like customer teams used to do. And of course, they can't do that for two reasons. One is these days, your customer teams have to have the same hardware and software as the manufacturer team. And of course, last year's Ferrari engine is now deemed pretty much illegal.
Some lawyers may say. Steve?
Some say.
Any final point on that? No,
my point was that they've taken a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Whether it's illegal or not, we will find out in the next few days. But even if it is deemed illegal, what they've learnt will put them in good stead for the next stage of their development.
And of course, Matt, they can't unlearn things that they have previously bought, sold, copied, even when they were legal.
Yeah. If it comes down to a similarity, the only test case that we know of, it was a 70% similarity, was adjudged to be the same. And if it's deemed a copy of Mercedes IP from last year, it's only potentially a problem. They don't specifically outlaw it. They don't specifically say it's legal. It's really going to be in the hands of the stewards to make that decision. And just on a completely irrelevant side note, I'm being told that Sean Avery and Martin Brodeur were the two hockey players I was referring to, for those of you who are in New York and are indeed Rangers fans. Sorry about that.
Love a hockey reference, Chris.
So it'll work for Racing Point because they were in a very heavy midfield scrap where a tenth of a second would determine whether they were going to be seventh or 12th on the grid sometimes. By doing what they've done, they have launched themselves very firmly into the head of that midfield. What that won't do for Ferrari is put them ahead of Mercedes. And that's what they need to do. Being at the head of the midfield is not going to be good enough for them.
I have an actual question. Has anyone gone and looked at Racing Point's times compared to Mercedes' times last year? I've not.
No, anybody? I'm going to now.
All right. Yeah. Somebody get on that quick in the chat room.
I can't wait for the whole of that segment to be deemed completely irrelevant when the full FIA ruling on that brake drum comes out like Monday morning. So please forgive us if you're listening to this after having seen that ruling.
Well, the problem, there's always problems with comparing times year for year, because we did it for the Red Bull when we were just talking in the WhatsApp chat about, you know, where they were relative to last year. And they may well have been, you know, a second quicker than they were in preseason testing in 2019. But so far, they have only at best been able to match their qualifying times in the three races we've had so far. So it's, you know, we're splitting hairs.
I just wanted to be clear. I meant take racing points times this year and compare them to last year's Mercedes times, because to me would be the interesting comparison that I don't think anyone's
done. So you can't do that in Hungary, just a note, because Hungary was resurfaced, so all the times were a little bit lower. But since we've meandered our way across to Racing Point, let's stick with them for a second, because we want to get to some of the driver transfer news also. But firstly, I just want to talk about like the state of where the teams are. So Mercedes dominance, is it as big as it seems, Chris?
100% yes. Mercedes have not only still got a great car, they've improved it from last year, whereas Ferrari have had one of their legs cut off and in trying to bandage it up, have also stubbed their big toe on their other working foot. And Red Bull, in also trying to improve their car, have just tripped over themselves a little bit and not quite worked it out yet. And that's why we're seeing such a huge gap. So maybe once Red Bull sort it all out, they'll be able to challenge Mercedes on a more regular basis. But right now, there's a huge difference between them.
So this is where I think Matt's argument about it being a two-pronged problem for Ferrari slightly falls down. Because when you look across the engine groups and you look at the Ferrari teams, obviously all the Ferrari teams have slipped down the pecking order. And they don't all have a side pod problem, Matt. So, you know, clearly the engine power unit problem is a huge factor.
It is a factor, but if you simply look at the percentages, you'll discover that Haas is the least worst Ferrari team in terms of percentages lost compared to last year.
Good job. That makes sense.
Followed a little bit later, a little bit more by Alfa Sauber, whatever. And then the Ferrari is significantly further down percentage-wise, like 0.7% down relative to their two junior teams. So I think that very much argues that there is not only the power unit problem, but also the aero problem at Ferrari that they cannot solve.
Okay.
And the rest of the teams are just struggling with the power unit, which I believe the estimate right now is about 0.4.
Okay. So I don't want to labor this point, but if you say that the two other Ferrari teams are less aerodynamically good anyway, so they're less sensitive aerodynamically to losing that power. So for them, it's much more linear. For Ferrari, they had a package based around being able to push through a certain amount of aero and downforce. So I don't find that to be too far away from my thinking. But when we look at the rest of the grid, obviously Ferrari have left a gap where, you know, a Ferrari-sized gap in second place. Red Bull seem to have not quite unlocked their potential. On the face of it, from qualifying, certainly, it looks like Racing Point are the second fastest team, if you look at the Hungarian Grand Prix result. I just can't help but feel, Chris, that Racing Point are being flattered at the moment because of that gap. And also, I really hate to do down the Williams party, but I feel like Williams are being massively flattered as well.
So, from an engine point of view, because Alfa and Haas have also been hindered by Ferrari's power unit debacle as Ferrari customers, that has helped Williams bridge the gap somewhat, I'll admit.
Yeah.
But then also, I don't think there's this bigger gap. It's not like we have this three-tier formula where we have, you know, Mercedes and then the midfield with Racing Point down to, let's say, AlphaTauri. And then you have Alfa, Haas and Williams in their own little bridge. Because, I mean, Williams have really kind of shaken it up this year, I feel like. And they've had some real standout moments. And I think this is only the beginning. I think there is genuine progress down at Williams, but I can see where you're coming from.
Oh, do you know what? Before the show, you said I was stupid for saying that.
No, because it caught me off guard, and then I stopped to think about it, and I'm like, actually, I can see where that's.
And Matt, I don't want to make it sound like I'm doing down the Williams party, because we've given them a lot of grief, and this should be a time for celebration. It's almost like it's too good, you know, to suddenly be from the back of the grid to Russell coming 12th in qualifying sessions, where he comes in every single race from now on. It just feels too much of a step.
Well, it is if you look at the actual performance in the race. If you look at the performance in the race, what you realize is that they've managed to design a car that can go fast for two laps, but they can't really get it round and finish in that position, much less make progress. Now, is it a problem they're going to be able to solve this season? That's something I don't really know yet. But it is, you were absolutely correct, a big step up from last year where they not only had a car that was slow in qualifying, but was also slow in the race. So there has been some improvement.
I can't help thinking about, you know, looking back to the start of the hybrid era and even before that, you know, you can make a car that is really good in qualifying trim. Like you say, good for one lap, good for two laps, but in race trim, it goes out the window. Very famously in 2013, I think Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg were some 0.8, 0.9. They were so far ahead of the grid on qualifying races. It was it was incredible. You know, they go, wow, you've built a rocket ship here. But every time it came to the race, they were overheating their tires or they were having problems with tire management and they were just shuffling down the back of the grid. So it does look a little bit like Racing Point and Williams are in that kind of boat where they have a rocket ship underneath them. And I'm hearing some quotes, sorry, I don't have a source, the Mercedes are some 0.4 seconds up on a lap with their new engine and new power unit. Sorry, were you the source, Matt?
Yeah, I did say that. I think that's mostly down to the power unit. I think it was a power unit comparison. They said it's roughly worth 0.4 a lap.
So that's from Mercedes
power unit right now.
Yeah.
Not just Mercedes, the team, but all the qualifiers.
So obviously in qualifying, you have less factors. So you don't have 50 odd laps to contend with, 70 laps to contend with. So it does make sense that Racing Point and Williams are flattering themselves in qualifying, and that's not quite holding up on race pace. Because on race pace, Racing Point kind of go back and they revert to being behind Mercedes, Verstappen, and kind of go into the clutches of McLaren, Renault. So, and that sort of feels about right. So I just want to temper the excitement when Racing Point lined up third and fourth. We suddenly go, well, this is the future. It's Mercedes, 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't feel like it's quite like that. Chris?
I am reminded of a conversation we had before this even started. We were talking about the idea of customer cars. And I think customer cars is a great way to get more people on the grid. It isn't necessarily a way to service our existing teams.
Yeah, well, if you want to broaden it out to customer cars, I mean, Steve, you've been around longer than any of us. 1,000 years of Steve Amy. You remember it when it was chariot races. Where do you stand on customer cars? I've been a big fan of it. I would love to see 30 car grids and people being able to, you know, live within your means. So you turn up to the Formula One grid, if you can afford to buy the Mercedes 2019 brake drum, good, on you go, for it.
I'd certainly like to see more cars on the grid. That would be wonderful. When it comes to customer cars, I'm kind of sitting on the fence a little bit. When I got into Formula One, and you quite rightly said I've been watching since 1926, teams built their own cars, and that was part of the allure for me. Part of it was the technology, you know, this effort of being able to design these rocket ships that went through the air faster than anybody else and would corner faster than anything else. That was part of what brought me to the sport. I'd hate for the sport to lose that. I can see that there is a place for customer cars. I guess the economics of the sport have changed over the years, and it's much harder now for teams to be able to outlay the sorts of money it takes in order to be able to completely individually develop and build their own car. There is a place for customer cars, I guess. I would hate, if they're going to be introduced into the sport, there has to be some mechanism by which they don't take over the sport. Maybe there are a way for teams to get in initially to get into the sport, but perhaps there's a development path for those teams that come in that they have to go through.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's important to keep that aspect. So you still have that, but we're just talking about ways to kind of bolster the grid numbers up. And of course, MotoGP has a great championship where they have the Riders' Championship, the Teams' Championship, and then the Manufacturers' Championship as well. because there are so many customer bikes in MotoGP, they will take like the best two results from Honda and that will go towards the Manufacturers' Championship. But you also have a separate Teams Championship.
I hate to rain on everyone's parade here, but F1 is a manufacturer's championship and customer cars absolutely go against the grain of that. And again, I'm going to say Racing Point right off the bat.
Yeah.
You see what the problem is. Oh, I buy last year's Mercedes and I run it with all the gear. Now, suddenly I'm really fast. I can be at the front of the midfield. I can even get a podium. That's fantastic. But that Mercedes is only going to ever go as fast as the engine, which has to be from Mercedes, in the back of it. Because otherwise, all the other aero trickery they install will not work because those engines are not hot swappable. You can't just put a Ferrari or a Mercedes or a Renault engine in the back and keep the same aerodynamics. Stuff has to change.
Yeah.
And what are the odds that Mercedes will let you beat them ever, period, end of? This is why Formula One went to being a manufacturer's championship, because without that, you have the manufacturers top three places and then everybody else as close as they are allowed to get.
Counter. Okay, so Racing Point are a bad example because they have a lot of resources behind them. I would say they possibly have infinite resources behind them. It's a matter of will. Renault, actually in that same boat, they have infinite resources behind them. So it's a bad example. However, the customer team model for me gives you a stepping stone into the sport. So you've almost got a Formula 1.5 in there. I mean, Chris, imagine like you follow the F2 and F3 grids. There's a lot of really good outfits there, but there's a huge gulf between what is mostly a spec series and then Formula 1. Imagine if like Dams could go, no, actually, we think we can run in Formula 1 next year. We can do it with customer parts from a previous season, so they're not going to be as good. But look, now we're a racing team. Now if we can get some prize money, we can start developing. That's how the Football League works. That's how other sports work.
And they very nearly did that back in 1995.
Really?
Back in the Formula 3000 days, which was the F2 of the day, and that was no spec series as well. Actually, that was when you could buy from different chassis manufacturers, work on your own engine partnerships as well. It was a fruitful time in which many things were possible, and I think we can learn a lot by going back to such a halcyon period.
I definitely know what halcyon means. No need to explain it to me.
Good, very good.
Well, good, excellent. Now I definitely know what it means. So yes, Racing Point are a bad example because it looks like they're going to be able to custom a team very well, and they're doing it in an environment where Ferrari are struggling and where Honda haven't quite yet, Honda Red Bull haven't quite yet got up to speed. So it's making that model look bad. But I think I still stand by that there is room for the manufacturers who spend a kajillion dollars on making and developing these parts, on then also making money by selling previous versions of it to teams to give them a leg up. Because Formula One's horrendous for costs. So for a team to suddenly just go, yes, I'm going to go from making road cars and endurance cars to entering Formula One, it's nearly impossible. So why not allow them to buy a base? Why not let them buy the floor? Why not let them buy certain parts? We could even make a list. And we can say, here are the listed parts that you could buy. Chris, then Matt.
So we're still getting the comments in, be like, well, you'll never win a championship
way.
But this is not the point of the idea. The point is to get teams on the grid and set them up. If you want to, that's in a way, that's what's beautiful about it, because it retains the element of if you want to win, you have to commit and make your own car.
Now, no one would mistake me for being a business genius. But as it is, the prize money doesn't even cover the 10 cars, the 10 teams on the grid. It barely covers it, and it certainly doesn't cover their expenses. If we add 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 extra teams, who is going to pay for all of that? Because I don't think the economics of the sport, as it is currently constituted,
Matt, you're making the same argument that people who say we shouldn't have electric cars because we've got garages that sell petrol. You'd have to just change all that. Chris.
That's exactly my point.
Okay,
I mean, we're changing the way prize money is being distributed anyway, and we have to review these things. If we're going to make these changes, then we have to accommodate for them.
Are we going to have 50 races a year? I mean, really, what are you going to change to bring in that much more money compared to what's already being brought in? I will grant you reallocating the prize money, get rid of the seniority money, divide it all up 50-50 between Liberty and the teams. Even if you do that, if you look at that gross take, you're not supporting 15 teams. You're not supporting 20 teams. In fact, the rules only give prize money to the top 10. So those other five teams have to have an entirely self-supporting business model with sponsors who no longer want to pay the money. I love the idea of more teams, but man, I don't. It's just like I love the idea of me buying a mansion in Manhattan. It ain't going to happen.
Matt, you can increase the revenue or you can decrease the costs. So we could maybe cap the costs, Chris.
Or you could split the shares in which the money is distributed and decrease each team's take.
All right. I like it when we get all shouty and arguey. I like it when there is genuine resentment that builds up between the panel. But it's okay because we have a revolving panel. So as furious as Matt is with Chris now, we'll replace him with Kyle or Alex in the next show. And beyond that, we'll have Brad and Ellen or Steve or Catman or Sarah. These people, they're interchangeable to me. They're nothing to me. No, that's not true. I like you all very much. And Chris, you can be followed on the social medias at Chris on Racing. That's where you do most of your social media. Steve is one of these. You know, you're still, I don't trust social media. I saw a Twitter once, but then it turned into a crocodile and attacked and killed me. Change your mind, Steve.
No,
come on Twitter.
It's not that. I just couldn't be bothered wasting my time.
But you get to argue with people, and if you're ever feeling happy or satisfied with your life, you can go on Twitter and search for hashtags that you know will upset you, and that just solves your happiness problem.
I suppose that's one way to look at it. No, I've got plenty of other things to do with my time rather than sit there arguing with people who really don't know what they're talking about most of the time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, the thing that occupies your time, Steve, is video. Graphics, how things look. You are a stickler for eyelines in the Mist Apex studio. The only reason why people are vaguely even looking at their webcams is because you issue guides for that. So you're someone who, when you watch a production, you're always looking at the production. So same way that when Matt sees a trumpeter or a musician in a film, he goes, that would never work. A trumpeter is usually armed with a machete.
Actually, watching Treme, the one thing that really bothered me was the trumpet player always has his slide pushed all the way in.
Never
would that be the case.
That's what I learned in trumpeting school. Never all the way in. And Chris knows as well when he watches things like what's that thing with the horrible boss with the fashion thing where she's trying to make it in fashion and like then there's a really horrible boss that yells at her and you're like, that would never happen in PR. That's the same reaction you have. It's okay. Go with it. The Devil Wears Prada. When you watch that, you get angry because you go, oh, that is not how you do clothes. I don't really know what you do for a living. But when Steve watches Formula One, he's looking at the graphics. What have you made of some of the questionable graphics in Formula One?
Oh, dear. Okay. I have a question to start with first. I was sitting looking at the race in Hungary, and it got to the point where there were so many graphics on the screen that I was having trouble seeing the racing.
Yes.
Now, you know me, I'm a big one for good on-screen graphics. You know, I think it's really important.
You love a graphic, Steve.
Oh, I love a good graphic. But I have an opinion at the moment that I think they've gone over the top with the race day on-screen graphics. There's so many of them. They come so fast. They take your attention away. Often they're showing information that is either not relevant to what I'm trying to watch and is distracting, or is showing the wrong sort of information for what I want.
Give us an example, Steve. We're talking about the AWS ones, aren't we, or the AG?
Yeah, the AWS ones are the worst of the whole lot.
Say what you mean, my Steve. Opinion Jeez. Stop sitting on the fence,
my opinion of them is that they're speculative at best. That is, the information they put up there is figured out by some algorithm. Okay, it's not really being... The information is not based on observation and fact. It's what this computer algorithm thinks is going to happen. Well, I'm not interested in that, really, and I would like to know how many people are. I want to know exactly what's happening. So things like these two drivers will, overtake in 15 laps time.
God.
Maybe they will. The Earth could end before that. We get to the next 15 laps. So it's purely speculative. And I think it's they're trying to add all sorts of excitement to the race, artificial excitement, when you don't need to. The racing is actually pretty good these days. So there's a lot of interest there already. Well, one of the things that worries me about the way that they display graphics is there is no thought of how you build a story with the information and the data. It's just, look at this here. Data. This guy's going faster than that, and now there's a gap to these two over here. In 15 laps time, these guys will have a fight, or we reckon that there'll be a pit stop in X number of laps time. It appears to me that what's happened is the broadcast medium has become just a way of displaying data, often randomly.
Data.
These graphics come up. They're kind of flashy. They've taken away from the ability of the broadcast media to build stories. And stories is what keeps people interested. Now, the stories are the fight between various drivers. And it may not be just the on-track fight. That fight may be the fight over the whole season, these two drivers and how they're going at each other over the whole season and what this particular race is, what is the relevance to that larger ongoing battle.
Let's let just Matt jump in for a second.
Yeah.
So I actually agree with you 100%. And what frustrates me more as someone who covers the races and talks about them is that for every race you're in as a driver, there's an immediate race, the person ahead of me, the person behind me. There's a race about my pit stop, who's in my pit window, who's not, and how will that affect me? And then there's a race about my tires. Can I get them to last longer? Will they degrade less than the person either in my pit window that I'm racing or the person ahead of me that I'm racing? So there's all these stories that are there that they get mentioned, but that the graphics could be really helpful in telling the longer stories of, oh, the race is settled down. No one is passing anyone. And that's when everyone's like, oh, it's all boring. But if you're sat there watching a timing screen and you know what the pit delta is, you're like, oh no, it's not boring at all. He's pulling out a 10th a lap and he's got 5 laps to get a gap and get in, or else he's out behind this person who will ruin his race.
And you can watch people.
That's super exciting if they would just talk about it.
And you can watch people responding as well on the timing screens as well. Chris?
I think it's there to try and explain to newer fans what is happening a lot of the time. And I can understand that because F1 is a very complicated sport and it needs to be explained to a lot of newer fans. But at the same time,
can I just butt in and say, but they're overcomplicating it. For those new people,
that's my point. You explain so much data to them that it puts them off because they're like, oh, this is too hard to follow and it's really difficult. And like that striking distance one as well really takes away from this. Like, oh, can he catch him up and passing? Because they're like, yeah, it's going to happen in six laps. But then it's also they're trying to engage the lesser engaged fans. They're like, no, stick around in six laps. There's going to be a thing happening. But we all know it's not there for us.
Yeah. If there was like really terrible commentators, then you could understand why this would be like a substitute. But actually, David Croft and Martin Brundle are massively experienced people who understand the gaps in the stories developing through the race.
Yeah, but American commentators don't talk on streams, do they? So... We've all watched IndyCar, right?
Yeah, look, I'm sure there's many fantastic
American. I'm coming for you as a fan of Steve Matchett, Bob Barsha, and David Hobbs. I am coming for you.
Okay,
so I'm poking fun. I love that.
There are many, many good US commentators, of course. And believe it or not, Steve, I am actually consulting for a firm that puts on motorsport races to train people to call a race effectively. And you're completely correct, there is a skill to building a narrative. It's something we've talked about within our commentary team for doing the iRacing series. And it's part of the broadcast to sit there and point the viewers to where do we think the battles are going to develop. And like Chris says, not just a shortcut to, well, you can doze off for 10 laps because it'll be 10 laps before that guy catches up. No, what are they doing within that battle? You know, when do you start being concerned about Verstappen catching you up? When do you start changing your racing habits? When do you have to switch from conserving your tires and saving your tires and fuel and all that kind of stuff? When does the battle turn to, now I have to think about every single mistake brings that gap down? And in the old days, in the olden days, in the 90s, which is sort of my glory period of watching Formula One, you had very simple graphics that would give you just, here's Mansell, here's Patrese, there's the gap between them, and here's what the gap was on the last. Here's what the gap was on the last. And you'd watch the race develop, and you'd see that gap changing. And that was all you needed to build a narrative. Matt, I think, you know, Steve does have a point that they've been giving us so much information that we don't need that narrative anymore.
Yeah, it's true. And it actually brings up something that's a real bugaboo of mine, which is that a lot of times these calculations don't take into account traffic. And a lot of times the commentators don't, when they start talking about lap times, take into the fact that, well, he just cleared four or five lapped cars, but the person behind him is still in clear air. That's a place that graphics might actually be useful. When one person is chasing another person.
But to your point, Steve, pit stops, whether the car will come out ahead, will he come out ahead with momentum? It feels like that graphic is taking that away because it's going 90% chance. Don't even think about it. Don't even bother getting excited. 90% chance he's coming out ahead.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I think there are better ways to be able to display that graphic that would get people a little more engaged rather than just say, no, 90% he'll be out in front. I think that part of the story is a really important part, and graphics can be used to, you know, complement it and, you know, help build the excitement. But you don't just say, don't even think about it because, yeah, the algorithm says he'll be out, you know, 10 seconds in front of him. Come on, display it in a way that's going to involve the audience rather than turn them off.
Rather than, I think a few people in the chat room mentioned the word patronizing. You know, it's talking at the audience, not talking with them.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I noticed in the chat room they said that we should have AWS graphics on our normal Sunday night podcast.
So we should have like percentage...
We'll have to develop some for you.
Percentage chance of Spanners interrupting trumpets before the end of his point because it's gone on for 10 minutes. Yep. Time before next tire intervention. You know, all that kind of stuff. I'm sure we could develop.
Will we get out of the next break in front of each other? Yes, all of that stuff.
We're over-unders on whether we will stick to our strict one-hour time limit, of course. Thanks very much for that segment, Steve. Certainly has been a big part of our our viewing experience. But Matt, we have a super chat comment because people in the live chat sometimes like to drop a tip in there, like a tip jar thing. And Richard Molden has said for $4.99, he's put in the tip jar. I know complimenting Matt can't win comment of the week, but what if I tell Spanners he's a sim racing god? Will that help him with comment of the week? I think it will, because we've done the Matt compliments to death. It's time for some Spanners love. If that isn't allowed, please refund immediately. Oh, no, sorry, Richard. No refunds. But you can also help us keep this juggernaut of Mist Apex going forward. We've done pretty well in the iTunes ratings, Matt, for UK sport. That's the one I tend to use. With all the football still going on, we went up to number 92. Of all the podcasts in the world, UK people listen... Oh, sorry, of all the sports podcasts in the world, UK people listen to us 92nd most-ish. So that was good. That was all right. Did good there.
I think top 100 in the middle of football season is a pretty reasonable claim for a podcast with no platform whatsoever.
No, we have no platform. We have no pedigree. We have no backing beyond what our patrons deem us worthy of. So we have as much strength and power as our patrons will give us. And also the tip jar people. We've had some really good contributions to our tip jar. Mist Apex podcast /tip jar. And you can put a note on there. You can say, I don't like Spanners. He's annoying and he's Hamfosi and hates Vettel or whatever. So this is just for Matt to buy whiskey and more trumpet grease. I believe that trumpets require greasing. I'm not an expert.
Yeah, valve oil, but yeah.
Valve oil.
Yeah, that's fine. So you can, we'll go with that.
You can specifically make it for valve oil. But if you want to support us more broadly, we are a very ambitious outfit. And we feel like we have power because of our patrons. Patreon.com/MissedApex. Matt and I are going to get together in the week to do our first patron-only podcast of the season. They went down very well last season. They are quite a bit more rambling. And we definitely don't worry about things like timing or structure or planning. And we also don't mind if it goes a little bit non-F1 as well.
Nope, not at all. We'll talk about all sorts of craziness, like my broken soda stream and the fact that I can't run without falling down. All the fun stuff.
Yeah, he fell down. Obviously, we've got Remain Indoors a little bit for a little bit of that kind of stuff. But that's down to one show a week now for the Remain Indoors podcast. And we're going to start doing our patron-only pod every few weeks as well. You can come and join us in our patron Slack group, which is the best forum in the world. And it's the forum that I spend the most time on. And you will get your podcast feed without advertisements. Patreon.com/MissedApex. Your support is much appreciated. Wow. Chris Stevens, I always go to you when it's like newsy stuff, because you've always had your finger on the pulse of news. And I know you're PR now, so you're ruined as a journalist. But I thought, honestly, like, I don't like you as a person, but I honestly thought that your journalistic credentials were exactly what the journalism world needed. All you were missing, in my opinion, was like an uncle already in media to give you the right contacts and put you in the right place. But that is to our benefit, because the early years of Mist Apex, we went to you for a drumbeat of news. We always had your finger on the pulse. You always know what's happening. So I just wanted to give you that rare bit of praise and encouragement. I feel ill, but there it is.
Oh, thank you very much. And of course, now I'm in PR. It's all positive news from here on out. There's no bad news here at all.
Nothing's ever bad. The driver finished 18th. Watch as our driver beat two of the top drivers in the world.
Perhaps there could be some bad news on the horizon for some particular drivers, depending on how the driver market plays out.
So we're talking Sergio Perez. And of course, the rumor is Vettel in to Aston Martin, Perez out. That would make me a sad panda.
I think it would be a loss. I can totally see where Aston Martin would be coming from, because first year in F1, Aston Martin signs four-time Formula One World Champion Sebastian Vettel. Certainly makes a much better headline than... we're keeping Perez and Stroll, especially because, like, we all know how good Sergio Perez is, but he hasn't won anything. And to the outside world of Formula One, he has no credentials, to be honest.
You have no credentials. So,
Well, no, I don't, but I'm not the one trying to get an Aston Martin seat.
Sorry, that was fanboy triggered there. Obviously, yes, declared Perez fan, Matt.
Yeah, and so you're basically saying if Perez winds up at Red Bull, that's going to be a bad thing?
No, but then that's the other rumour that's come, Chris. I mean, it's madness. Okay, firstly, everyone's talking as if there's a seat available at Red Bull. We'll come back to Albon. But, you know, this is a silly season part deux.
It's really interesting. Racing Point, they kind of tangled themselves a little bit. They're saying all the right things that could come back and bite them a little bit later on if they do end up replacing Sergio, because they're saying, oh, the loyalty is really important to us. And let's not forget it was, you know, Sergio put them into administration a couple of years ago. And that's what helped create the team as it is today. But ultimately, if they want to replace him, they have to buy him out of his contract. And of course, they will lose his sponsorship. Frankly, that is insignificant money compared to what Stroll and co are bringing in. So, but then does Sebastian Vettel want to race at Aston Martin? That's the key thing for me, because he wants to be in F1 to win, not just to hang around.
So I could be crazy, but doesn't Perez bring in north of like $30 million with Carlos Slim behind him? I mean, you know, I wouldn't turn down that sponsorship if it was offered to me.
When you have Stroll and his consortium, Stroll has enough money to buy Formula One and turn it into his backyard entertainment. So I know it sounds ridiculous, but for me, that $30 million from Carlos Slim just seems like it's peanuts. That's shopping money.
Okay. I am surprised by that, because $30 million is not to be sneezed at. In fact, there are probably several teams that would be very delighted to have that money, chief among them, Alpha and or Haas.
Which is where I think he will end up. I think more Haas is more likely.
Steve.
And it's,
I was going to make the same sort of point as Chris was going on to, that Carlos Slim has a relationship with Ferrari already. And I can see that he might just suddenly decide that, like Papa Stroll, he's going to go and either invest heavily / buy a team for his boy to go racing in, his boy being Perez in this case. So it seems like a fit for Carlos Slim to take his $30 or $40 million and invest that in Haas, and Perez would race there. Perhaps Grosjean would be gone, which I've got to say I don't think too many people would be upset about. And I think that it would probably help Haas. I mean, let's face it, there's a question about whether or not they're going to exist next year or not. Slim took his money there, then that would probably give them the lifeline to keep going racing for the next few years.
And let's not forget, Sergio Perez arrived in Formula One a Ferrari junior.
Yes, exactly.
So from a Perez point of view, the least likely option to me feels like him going to Red Bull, but which would effectively be a promotion. So yes, he would be in the shadow of Max Verstappen, but he's probably going to pick up some race wins there. I'm confident that Red Bull Honda are going to end up being the second best team this year. So he's going to be fighting for podiums and race wins next year. You know, I can see him at least Ricardoing it at Red Bull, Chris.
Yeah, so I think this was, I don't know if this was the original source, but certainly I saw it on racefans.net, that the Albon being replaced by Perez story. So I think we've realized since the first race, Albon is looking over his shoulders and has to be, because we know that Red Bull will not hesitate to swap around their drivers between Red Bull and AlphaTauri if they need to. But now it's like they're looking from the outside world as well, you know, and looking at other teams. And we talked about the Red Bull Junior program not quite delivering because they were having to look at their old drivers that they previously rejected to bring them up. And that's exactly what Albon was, and Kvyat as well. And now they're just looking elsewhere at other teams. They're like, well, he's got a fair bit of money and is a pretty handy peddler, so let's get him alongside Max. And I think it would make a really good team. Will it be better than Max and Alex? I think that remains to be seen.
Obviously, the elephant in the room here is, if Vettel comes into Aston Martin and Perez is kicked out, then we're seeing what I think people would consider a top tier driver, if not ultimately ultimate class driver, Sergio Perez, losing his seat instead of Lance Stroll, who, although he has had some great results, Hungary in particular, he is not considered a top tier driver. No one is considering Lance Stroll a top tier driver. We're acknowledging an improvement, but I don't think, Steve, we're saying, you know, he's up there yet.
Well, I was about to ask, I mean, he's probably not up there yet, but is there a possibility that, remember that Papa Stroll isn't the sole, man involved in this takeover of Aston Martin.
Yeah.
And he's got other investors with him, and perhaps it's got to the stage where they're going to put a lot of money into this, and perhaps the other investors have got a bit of weight in this whole argument. And perhaps it's time for Papa Stroll to say to his son, okay, Lance, you've got a few months. You either make your mark or I'm being pressured by everyone else because we're spending so much money to get the best team I can, and you're not providing that. So maybe they send Lance off to Haas or off to somewhere else with some of his dad's pocket money, and maybe they put Vettel and Perez into the Aston Martin team next year.
The thing, I don't think he's got months. I think he's got weeks, because all these decisions are happening now. And if we remember, there were certain teams last year that had their lineup sorted by June. And of course, we'd had half a season by that point, and we're all having a very delayed start. And that's why we're getting this mad driver market at the moment, where seats were being decided before we'd even gone racing. And if he has had a word with Lance, then, and certainly the boot up the backside seems to have worked for him in Hungary. Yeah. So if he can carry that over, he should be safe. But I feel like it's getting less and less likely that scenario is playing out of them potentially replacing Lance.
Reportedly, the deadline for Perez is this Friday, I believe. July 31st is the date his exit clause expires. And so we might have some real fun news going into the weekend.
Okay, so hopefully that is going into the weekend and not another Monday news story that renders all our debate completely irrelevant. Thus is the danger of doing a show on a Sunday night. But we have done the odd drop-ins where, like when the Vettel story got announced, we did an extra Vettel show. We do have capacity to do that. And, and I'll say it again, it is because of the patrons that we do have the capacity to jump on occasionally and do those extra shows. I'm thinking about calendar news as well. There's a lot of calendar news. If we don't get it all in, we might try and do a catch-up show in the week, or even a dedicated preview. Chris?
Well, we can just summarize it by saying they're all awesome.
All the calendar.
The new races, okay. Especially, Portimao, my God, that's awesome.
Matt?
Portimao, Nürburgring, and Imola.
Yeah, I'm pumped.
What is delightful about this is how late in the year they are in Europe. The weather is going to be fantastically awful by all accounts. Everyone is looking forward to it. It'll be a madcap random error generator for the top teams for sure. And just the elevation change at Portimao is so fantastic.
Okay, do you know what? Made a decision. We're gonna go through these new tracks and quickly give our opinions on them. The European races is going to be cold and either really grippy tires or suddenly wet with no grip. But I did have an email criticizing me a little bit. Can you believe it? An email criticizing
really?
Me. Unbelievable.
You?
SpannersReady@gmail.com. I've started catching up with the backlog of correspondence now. I love hearing from you, honestly, good or bad. I just love knowing that you're listening, and I love knowing where Missed Apex fits into your life. A bit of criticism I had after speaking out on race issues was, well, you've not mentioned it again. Do you think racism and diversity was cured in F1 after that first race? It's a reasonably fair critique. It's just that with the excitement of the start of the season, I didn't want to get bogged down in those issues when we had addressed them in some depth, I think, in our preview show. But things have happened that do move me to kind of just make a short comment on what I think the state of where F1 is addressing diversity and in particular the Black Lives Movement at the beginning of races. So a lot of people are very angry with it or feel that it should have passed by, but I don't feel like that. I don't feel like we've had a sustained united show, and I probably share some of Lewis Hamilton's frustrations, but I also share Joe's sentiments where if you are forced to do a thing, it loses all meaning. The thing that has made me sad over the last couple of weeks are the feeling that Lewis Hamilton is absolutely doing things on his own. He has spoken up about Sebastian Vettel supporting him, but he's very much given the impression that everywhere else he looks, he's not getting that support. So what I hear from the long-term commitment from the FIA is that there are real grassroots things happening. And I know of one very specific project where I'm actually honored to be consulting and helping a group of people on get their feet on a project. And I've seen the FIA give it their full support. So from that point of view, that's great. But what we've also seen is reports of Jean Todt making comments about the Black Lives Movement support. And he has there is a caveat to this because it was translated, so the translation could be wrong, but it appeared as if he was basically saying all lives matter. And I don't think, 5 years ago, I would have said you could say all lives matter and not really understand what you were saying. And you could use all lives matter and be like, oh, but, I just think genuinely all lives matter. Whereas now we've got to the point that if you're a smart man like Jean Todt, you know what all lives matter means. It is used as a dog whistle to signal to other people that you are actively stopping diversity and stopping movements like Black Lives Matter. There's no longer any real excuse for a smart person to innocently say all lives matter. When you say all lives matter, you're making a specific point. Now, Jean Todt is right at the top of the organization. And before those comments came out, we had things like the kneeling not being focused on because they cut away to people jumping out of an aeroplane. And you could easily dismiss that as, well, that's just one of those things. It's bad timing. You had things like the lack of organization, Giovinazzi turning up late, people not seeming to know what they were doing at the Hungarian Grand Prix. You had things like Roman Grosjean out of the blue criticizing Lewis Hamilton's salary. Then you hear the comments from Jean Todt, which I hope still that is somehow been misinterpreted. And then you hear that Roman Grosjean has been anti the continued support of Black Lives Matter. And it leaves a sour taste in your mouth. And Matt, I think the way I'm going with this is I feel a frustration that this is going to peter out. Lewis Hamilton on his own can't do it, can't drive it forward. And it feels like at the very top, at the top of the drivers, association and the very top of FIA, the FIA, there isn't a will to really pursue the matter.
At the risk of sounding slightly political.
Well, I think I ruined that. The genie's out.
It's not necessarily a surprise if you look at the money and the types of people that are involved in Formula One, that this would be an issue that faces a large uphill battle within the terms of the organizing of the sport. The thing that makes me angriest is watching opening day in America, baseball, which is like better cricket, if I'm being honest. There was a time and a place the players all came out and everybody who was going to kneel, kneeled. And it was specific and everybody was there. There's so many major professional sports now that provide the space for their athletes to represent their views that way, whatever their views may be. And the fact that Formula One is not doing that, I think is doing a real disservice to what Lewis is trying to do here. And I support him 100% in what he's trying to do, because I don't think there is a more important cause in many ways on the planet right now than what we're talking about with regards to gender and diversity issues. It is a problem. It needs to be solved, and it needs to be kept foremost in the public consciousness until it is.
Okay. I agree. I'm just feeling a little bit in despair. Someone tell me why I'm wrong. @SpannersReady on Twitter, @MissedApexF1. Give me hope. Tell me why I'm wrong to feel like this is going to peter out and that Lewis Hamilton is, in the end, just going to have to go, well, it's just not happening in F1. So let's end on some positivity by arguing about Formula One tracks. Chris, give us a rundown. What are the new tracks that are going to be on the calendar? Remind me again.
So Mugello was confirmed a couple of weeks ago, but this week we have had Portimao, Nürburgring and Imola also added to the calendar.
Okay, so look, let's start with that. Okay, so the only one of those that I don't know is Portimao. When was the last time have we ever had F1 cars there?
So there was a test when they were testing out the 2009 regulation cars. They had these weird hybrid cars that were part 08 and part 09 where they did a test at Portimao. The thing at Portimao is a much younger circuit than I think people realize.
Right.
It was built and opened in 2008. And I thought it was, I remember it being much older than that. But it's a modern facility. It's right. Nice and white Spanish. You have this whole thing about modern F1, yeah. You go to the more modern circuits. And I think people are already clicking off and be like, no, we shouldn't be going to Portimao. But I think it would be fantastic.
Matt?
I'm pretty sure that one of the Alphas tested at Portimao this year. So look for them to win.
Well, yeah. Well, the AlphaTauri did their filming day at Imola as well. And I'm pretty sure, like, Ferrari have done a lot of stuff at Mugello because Italy. Mugello is a truly fantastic circuit. And the jury might be out on the racing. If there is a lot of it, then it will be into Turn 1 mostly. But just what a stunning, stunning circuit. And qualifying will be amazing. And Imola, I think, yeah, jury's out on the racing. But
okay,
I think it's going to look fantastic.
Okay, before we skip ahead too far then. So we can be positive about Portugal and we'll look forward to that. Apparently they're selling tickets, a limited amount of tickets for spectators.
Yes, the hope is that it will be possibly the first race not being held behind closed doors.
Okay, well, that if that happens, that means that we're in a good state generally, so let's hope for that. Steve, you and I are probably the most long-standing viewers of F1 on the panel. Matt had a bit of a gap, I know. But if we look at Imola, obviously horrible memories from Imola. That aside, I don't have optimistic reason to think that it's going to be a good racetrack. I was looking at some footage of Michael Schumacher around there in his Ferrari. And even with that grade of car, it was already looking like a narrow, small circuit.
Yeah, Imola's showing its age a little bit, I guess. It was never one of my most favourite tracks for that very reason, in that it is, I agree with you, I think it is a little narrow. And the racing just never seemed, that aggressive and that good there. I mean, a different thing on bikes. There's been some amazing bike races there.
All right, Steve, you've triggered me.
But Mugello, I'm really excited about going racing there again. It's been a while, and wow, is that a good track for cars?
Okay, Chris and Matt want to comment on Imola, then we'll go to Mugello.
I think what's going to help with Imola, and I think it'll help with all of these new circuits as well, is that because they're not tracks that Formula One traditionally goes to, so the cars haven't been designed to race around them. All right, that's not a huge thing, but they're going to have absolutely zero data. They're going to have no sim data really either. This is going to be a test of simulators really. And I think we're going to see a few surprises. That's where the drama of it is going to be. We're looking at more story unfolding races rather than swapping and changing at like Imola, for example.
Matt?
Well, I don't know about the rest of you, but the thing that makes me most excited about this is the fact that at Imola, it's only going to be a 2-day event, not a 3-day event. And that's due to the driving distance from Portimao to Imola. So that alone is going to make it a lot more exciting than what we're used to seeing.
And I think you also throw in the caveat of it's Europe in October. It's probably going to be cold, most likely be a bit damp as well. We could see some wet races. I think there are more than enough reasons to be excited about why these races that we particularly previously like turned our noses up at, we should be excited to see them back on the calendar, particularly when a lot of them, it's only going to be like this one year. And
hey,
then we might go back
to
normal.
Man, look, I don't think the current season of cars, I don't think these are the worst for overtaking and racing. We had a pretty good race at the Hungaroring. When cars were close to each other on track, they could fight and they could overtake. Certainly a track like Nürburgring, which was great in our Formula Renault 2.0s for our Mist Apex series. I mean, it's a gorgeous track. It's a beautiful track, the Grand Prix circuit version of that. So I'm hopeful that we can have some good races. Oh, turn one, Chris. Come on, turn one at Nürburgring. You basically got to stop, go back on yourself, loop 180 degrees round, and then eventually go right.
While your front right hangs in the air because of the drop.
Now, yeah.
It's a fantastic track. I don't know if it's the best looking because it's a lot of grey and it's not the Nordschleife where you have all the mountainous range and the green forest that line the circuit.
But you like your undulation. You like your cranking up hills.
I love the circuit. Brilliant circuit. And it has provided some great races for Formula One in the past. And I look forward to seeing it back.
Okay,
yeah, so it's a shame. I think it's a shame we couldn't have had Hockenheim on there as well because of, you know, they have no money basically, and holding a race behind closed doors was just never going to be an option for them.
Yeah, I think it's really important to note that a lot of this calendar confusion is coming from the fact that the traditional promoters need a full sales ticket to support the prices that Liberty charges them, which are the prices that Bernie negotiated for the most part. I just want to throw that in there. And so we're seeing these new tracks because they don't have an existing deal and Liberty can work with them in order to get the cars racing. And that with these three additions and with the subtractions of the Americas races, which were all made official, they are now two races short of hitting the 15 they need to hit to get the full payout from the pay TV contracts that they have.
And in other news as well, there are going to be more than enough races for the Formula 2 and Formula 3 to get their complete calendar as well. Formula 3 is 10 rounds, Formula 2 is 12.
Right, we're short on time, guys. So I've got a pick here. Right, I think we're definitely going to do a Patreon podcast where we'll look a bit more at a preview. So, but I don't want to miss out on content as well, so we may consider jumping on the mics midweek as well and doing a bit of a deeper dive on the tracks. Some interesting things to note. It's the season now. It's the real season. In the off season, I was reluctant to do more than one a week. But at the end of last season, I think we were doing like 7 or 8 at some point. So I want to get predictions from you guys for the British Grand Prix, Silverstone 1. Interesting to note as well that Silverstone offered to do 12 races in order to help Formula One do a full calendar. And I think with Austria, we showed, you know, if we've got a decent enough track that allows racing, we can have multiple races at one place. Not sure about 12, would probably get a little bit bored of it. But what might have happened is we know stable regulations bring teams closer together. Perhaps turning up on the same track and constantly seeing what other teams are doing and being inspired by what other teams are doing setup-wise and getting used to the track and doing more testing, by the 12th race at Silverstone, you might find that people have closed the gap a little bit as well. So while I'm here, the ways you can help Mist Apex podcast, as well as supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/MistApex, you can tell a couple of mates just at the water cooler at work or send them a link, mistapexpodcast.com. When you send them that link, they've got the video to choose from and they've got their audio to choose from. And that will help us to get them hooked and part and join the army of Mist Apex listeners. Tell a couple of mates, or you can leave us an iTunes review. That really helps us in the rankings as well. Leave us a 5-star review. If it's a 5-star review, I don't mind how much you slate Matt and slag him off. I don't mind. It's completely fine. 5 stars and then say why Matt is terrible. Just of late, I don't know what it could be, but just of late, we've started to get a smattering of very low reviews seemed to be aimed at me personally. So either I'm just terrible or they've got issue with me. If you'd like to counter that, then leave us an iTunes review. That would be much appreciated. Let's go round the table. Steve, give us a prediction for the first Silverstone Grand Prix. What are we going to see?
I think it doesn't matter whether it rains, hails or shines. You're going to see Mercedes, you know, scoop the pool. As much as I hate to say it, I think that's what's going to happen. I think at the end of the weekend that Red Bull will have come good. I think that track kind of suits them a bit. And I think Ferrari are going to end up just treading water. I can't see that there's going to be any kind of upside for them. No development, no advancement. And I think they've got to watch out because Racing Point are showing some great turns of speed, and it'll be this is their home track. You know, they'll feel very comfortable there. I think that they're going to put on a blinding display. I think this is we're really going to see Racing Point's speed in the next two races.
Excellent. Chris Stevens.
Well, I think that was boring and predictable. So mine is going to be both Mercedes. They take each other out, going side by side into Cop's Corner, leaving the Racing Point of Sergio Perez to storm to victory ahead of a McLaren double podium.
Nice. I am predicting the resurgence of Albon. He has been, for the last 2 weeks, in a cocoon of rage. Unbelievably looking at the TV screen and people saying that his job is up for grabs. He comes out to Silverstone, a track he knows well, a track he has idolized as a child and has seen all his heroes race on. This is the track where he goes, no more. He goes all out aggressive. He out-qualifies Verstappen. Ugh, that's the big one. Out-qualifies Verstappen this coming qualifying session and ends up running in second place with the potential to beat Lewis Hamilton, and Lewis Hamilton sticks it up the inside in a podged attempt to defend his position. Both cars go out and Max Verstappen wins the first British Grand Prix. That's my prediction. Matt, two rumpets.
Well, I hate to be boring, but referencing last year's race, were it not for the safety car, Bottas would have won that race. So I'm going to go with Valtteri. But to me, the real winner is going to be Pirelli because they're swapping compounds between the two races, which is like the most exciting thing I've ever seen happen with tires. Well, aside from the ones that all exploded there several years ago.
Awesome. Right. I'm looking forward to two British Grand Prix and then a Spanish Grand Prix as well. A few people obviously have been talking about this recent travel ban from people from Spain. I believe Elite Sport is exempt. So Formula One shouldn't have an issue with that, Matt.
Yeah, I think according to Chris Medlin on Twitter, you're allowed in, but you have to go straight to your accommodations and straight to the racetrack. You're not allowed to go do anything else. So as of right now, there's not an issue for a journalist and teams traveling from Spain back to the UK for the race.
Okay, Matt, you only get vice versa. You get three candidates. Who's the winner of this week's? Comment of the week.
Well, up front, as always, I must mention those who participated in the Super Chat, and I'd like to say thank you to Vermans, whose £4.99 bought him the following comment, sponsorship for 1 week only, Chris, to have a blue bedroom again.
I like it. Okay, who's the real contenders for comment of the week?
All right, I believe that we have, wait, how many did you say I had?
Three.
Seven?
Three.
Yeah, seven, okay. Stuart Neal, Ferrari have been watching rerun films in lockdown and think Back to the Future is a good idea.
That's why they've only been running at 88 miles an hour on the straights.
Takura Chendove is in with, you know, F1 is back when F1 fans complain about F1 and how F1 is presented to them.
Yes, which, we're not complaining about.
I feel very seen.
Yeah, we are.
We're very seen.
How privileged are we? It's no longer, oh, when is F1 coming back? It's like, ugh, I don't like that graphic they put up that one time.
Oh, this is so hard because there's so many good ones left, but I'm going to have to go with Richard Malden. Okay, this is doing my head in. Serious green screen issues. Monaco is daylight. Brooklyn is nighttime. Australia is daylight. That's not how the sun works.
We're like sunny everywhere except in New York for our green screen backgrounds. And that does actually remind me to say, if you are an audio listener, come to YouTube, just check out what we do and check out our faces. Everybody comments on how I look different to I sound. Everyone thinks Matt is fat and he's not at all. He's a very slender, athletic, cycly man. So do come and check out the video. And if you're a video only person as well, do check out and subscribe to the podcast. It's very convenient because you can listen to it whilst driving and operating heavy machinery, whereas watching a YouTube video while doing those two things is frowned upon. So do us a favor, just subscribe to both. Matt, who's the winner?
I think the winner has to be Takura Chindov. You know, F1 is back when F1 fans complain about F1 and how F1 is presented to them.
Comment of the week.
thank you very much for listening to our Little Shed production. Please follow Chris at Chris on Racing on Twitter. Follow Steve in real life. He's in Australia in one of those towns. Ramsey Street, I believe, is where he lives. So go there and follow him around. You can speak to Steve. He's in our Patreon Slack group as well. He's there if you want to speak to him. And Matt is at MattPT55. And I am at Spanners Ready. And the show is at Mist Apex F1. You were leaning in, Matt, because I failed to plug your wife. So I'm going to do that now. At
Excuse me?
Yep, you heard me. At A
what?
Yep, I'm just going to roll with it and pretend I did it on purpose. At A Weaver Writes, go and follow Matt's wife because she writes books and you might be interested in buying them. No further comment from Matt. So that just leaves me to say, guys, wherever you see us next, be it the patron-only pod, be it a Joe show, or if we decide to do an extra supplemental midweek show, wherever you catch us next, be brave because wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Mist Apex. Okay, let me try again. Now I have to promote Matt's wife at A Weaver Writes. Would you prefer that terminology, Matt?
Yeah, actually, I kind of would.
Yeah, I can see why.
More to the point, I think she would too.
Okay. It came from a good place, okay?
I know what you meant to say.
To help you so your family has money and you can afford a Ferrari. That's all I was trying to do.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.